Hello, listeners, and welcome to the third and final part in this mini-series on surviving spiritual abuse on the Cult Vault podcast. I'm your speaker, Casey, and in part one, I spoke with Ken Garrett about the general signs of toxic religious spaces. In part two, Ken talked about his personal experiences in an abusive church. And in this third and final part, we discuss Ken's family and their escape, recovery, activism, and how Ken is holding on to his faith. If you would like to support the podcast, please consider heading over to patreon.com/thecultvault for early access to ad-free and full-length episodes from only £1 a month or $1.50. And now, here is Ken.
I'm having such a great time talking about things. I knew I was going to have a nice little education session today, and I feel satiated, and we're not even at the end, so this is great. What might be result of some of these wounds on an individual who attempts to reconnect with their faith and find a safe place for worship?
Oh, it's hard. It's so hard. And this is the challenge that the church, and by the church, I just mean any church that wants to be a healthy church and any pastor that wants to be a shepherd. This is the challenge. And it has not been addressed yet, but it is, the sun is starting to rise, okay? No pastor wants to see people suffer. And so the good ones out there are going to be catching wind of this phenomena, and they're going to become experts. I spoke at a church this last summer, a friend of mine's church in Northern Washington. And as I spoke about spiritual abuse, many of his members had experienced abuse through a couple of local churches, big ones, and then the Mars Hill Church in Seattle. And they were just crying and getting in touch with it. And when I left and we were talking later with my friend, I said, you know what? As long as you stay where you're at in your ministry in that town, you need to become an expert at caring for victims of spiritual abuse, because they're going to keep coming to you and then their kids. And so it's a big thing, and it's happening, and it's getting better. But for a church to deal with that now is really something we have to learn how to do. I think I managed to wander away from your question. Can you maybe give it to me again? I'm sorry. Problem with preachers, man. They just go on and on and on.
It was to look at what might be the result of some of these wounds for an individual who is really trying to reconcile their faith, somebody that doesn't want to walk away from faith altogether, still has something in their soul that tells them, you know, I am a Christian, or I'm, you know, X faith-based individual. How can a person hold on to that in the face of all of this abuse that they've experienced in their spiritual house?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for bringing me back into my lane on that, because the deconstruction movement and the ex-church, ex-evangelical, empty the pew, you know, the various movements that are happening today that attack church membership and really encourage people to find themselves and their identity outside of Christianity. That's fine if that's what a person wants, but I don't think we should recruit people out of their faith, especially claiming that the whole faith is terrible. You know, when you were in a sick expression of it, and bad churches and cultic churches have been around since the first few decades of Christianity's beginning. So, you know, that's not quite right. And then the movement, the loud movement of people leaving and deconstructing, I don't mean deconstructing really, but just rejecting Christianity, has left behind this very important group of people. It's the people who still believe in Jesus. And they don't know him quite like they wish they did. And they have trouble getting together in a church because of all the things. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on. But if you were to ask them and say, well, therefore, do you not believe in Jesus anymore? And they would go, well, of course I believe in Jesus. You know, he is, and I believe him, and that's it. It's just, and then fill in the blank. So I believe what they are, those kinds of people are exactly what I was. And it's a lost sheep who has wandered away. And I didn't wander away. I was led away by a false shepherd, right? And I'm away from the flock, and I'm way out in the mountains now, and I can hear the voice of the shepherd, the good shepherd. And I know that voice. I can hear the voice, but I have lost the ability to cry out. And I don't know a path to take to get back to that voice. I hear it. I know it's there. I know he's there. I know he's good, but I seem to have no ability to even alert him to my presence, and to, I don't know how to get back to the voice. And I believe that's the experience of Christians that have left these groups. And it's a precious, precious thing that can take years of hard, painful recovery work to get to before you ever can walk into a church again. That is a fact. But the effect on maintaining faith, it's really not fair. But you are put into a world where, as a survivor who actually still believes in Jesus, so you are a person of faith, you are left alone with God. And I believe if you can not be left alone with the God that your cult gave you, but if you can stay in the room with God the way you wish he would be, the chances are you're going to find him to be a lot better than you thought he would be. And if Jesus is really who he says he was, the good shepherd, the, you know, the loving physician, all of that, if that's all true, and I believe it's true, he is going to care for you. It's not fair that you have to wait. It's not fair that you have to have faith when your faith has been stripped. But nonetheless, if you can just stay in the room with him, I believe that's your safest bet. Now, that being said, there's a couple of things that I think are very important when you're in that situation. And the first thing is to find other survivors, okay? And if they are survivors of your faith, that's great. If they were in the group you were in, so much the better. And if they're survivors of another faith, you might not agree on your faith, but you know what? You've got a very, very common experience that you should be able to enjoy friendship with one another and mutual sharing and vulnerability with each other. So I believe it's very helpful if you can in any way, lift up your eyes to the horizon and try to find somebody else who can hear you and who you can hear, who has experienced it. So things like what, you know, Casey, what you're doing and connecting with people, you're providing what might be the most important thing is honest, legitimate community. And then the second thing is, it can be really, really tough. In fact, my book, which is this book here, it was, it triggered some people. And I wrote it to be handed to somebody walking out the door of a cult to where they can sit down and within an hour have a good idea what happened to them. But the second thing is to start to educate yourself to the processes of narcissistic abuse to the corruption of what is a healthy community and a healthy faith. And you do that through accessing both Christian and non-Christian academic research of people who love and who care. And you know, truth is truth regardless of the religion it's in. I believe there's some truths about Christianity that are pretty exclusive to me and exclusive to the world, but nonetheless, beginning to educate yourself about what happened to you is critical. And sometimes that leads to a relationship with a therapist, which is really good. It needs to be the right therapist, but to have somebody who gets it about cults and doesn't just want to talk about when you were 5 years old, what made you mad about your mom or something, but instead is going, okay, something else happened to you that's really big and it's cult. And a therapist who gets that is immeasurably helpful. So that and physical, you know, care from a doctor, those are some self-care things you should do. But that's what, those are the things you can do to help yourself. But the big thing is to say to God, I'm at least going to stay in the room with you. I don't think I can cross the door of that church or any church. That's not going to happen for a while. And if it does, like I tell survivors that come to my church and they say, I can't get into a church. I can't make a commitment and all that. And I say, hey man, I'm not asking for a commitment. Why don't you shoot for every couple of months you pop in and you leave when you want. That's cool. If you feel like it. Or maybe you just want to get a cup of coffee, no worries. You take that off the table and you tell God, you know, let's pretend I'm in the middle of Sahara, Africa, and I don't have a church to go to, but it's just me and you. That's a long answer, but that's kind of where I'm at.
I love it. More beautiful words. Absolutely. And it touched on a few of my remaining questions, really. One of the things I wanted to ask, which you touched on in your chapter in Wounded Faith, which I can only imagine you touch on extensively in the book In the House of Friends, what advice would you give to practicing Christians who do go to church and do see themselves as committed to their faith? What would you say to people who may not understand on a surface level, people that can't walk through those church doors right now, or people who are saying, I don't know if I can keep my faith?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that, Casey. You see, what happens in the walls of a church is supposed to be something that makes you walk out of the church and bring the beauty and graciousness of Jesus to the world around you. And so for the Christian who's, I don't know if I'd say they're practicing faithful Christians, but healthy individuals as Christians in a church.
Yeah. People who have never experienced this type of spiritual abuse and it's unrecognizable to them, something they've never come across in their lives before, because I wouldn't say it's lucky. I'd say it should be, they've had a typical experience of faith to one of these not so typical.
Well, I would say, you know, the answer isn't you need to read a book, you need to buy my book or something like that, because maybe you won't run into a survivor. But here's what I would say: when you run into the angry ex-Christian or the Christian who says, I don't go to church and I don't want to, I grew up in the church, I always, no way and all that, hold back from judging them and take that as an invitation for friendship and say, well, you know what? I've got a boatload of friends that don't go to my church and it's cool with me. And if you're of a mind to do so, say, well, let's just get together and talk if you want. Or maybe you won't even talk. Maybe you'll just say, well, what's your name? I want to remember you and remember to say your name when I see you. I mean, just there's things you do to reach out to people. But in turn, but that's when you come in contact with the person who's been abused. That's different than what we were trained to do as Christians. We grew up trained to say, oh, you went to a bad church. Well, did you believe in the full deity of Jesus Christ? Did you believe that the Bible is inspired? Did you believe Jesus was born of a virgin? I mean, we immediately start applying a doctrinal template. And if the person says something like, if they fail at any point along it, then you go, oh, well, that's it. You were in a cult. you didn't believe this fundamental Christian, you know, truth. But if the person says, yes, check, 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 we believed all of those things, then you're flummoxed if you're not prepared to accept that there are cultic churches with orthodox beliefs. You're flummoxed. What do you do? So a healthy Christian at that point should just say, I'm really sorry. You got screwed over really bad in your church. And what's your story? And let it go at that. Don't invite them to your small group. Don't make sure they're really a Christian. Don't give them a Bible. Don't recruit them. Don't set them up with your Christian cousin who is looking for, you know, just be present with them right at that moment and drop the concept that they need to be in church to be okay.
I imagine that for an individual that has been through an abusive experience in a church environment or a faith-based environment, to consider seeking out a community that will do the correct of what the individual should have experienced in the first place. If somebody can get past the triggers, things that make them remember ways that they felt, certain biblical songs, for example, that might make them reflect on things that were horrific for them at the time, even if an individual can get past all of those things, there's no way of knowing for sure that you're not walking through the doors of another abusive environment. And that's the clincher, isn't it? That's the really difficult.
Yeah.
And that's why this work around understanding, researching, highlighting the phenomenon of spiritual trauma and understanding how it manifests, what it might look like for an individual, how somebody can even begin to think about recovering from this, is something that is in dire need of being looked into even more. And I just wanted to make a quick mention to one of my longtime listeners in case he's tuning in. He's a pastor himself of a small church, and it gets me a bit emotional to talk about, but he listens to the show and he listens to episodes where people have experienced religious trauma, spiritual, so that he can make sure that he keeps himself in check and is doing the best for his congregants, so that he knows that he's never putting anybody in a position where they would ever feel. And he has actually, before he stepped into his pastoral role, an experience of the armed forces as well, and being individuals. So it sounds like you're both similar in the way that you've dedicated your lives to helping other people, and I think that that says a lot between practically helping people spiritually as well. So I just wanted to give a shout out to that person. If you're listening, just thank you so much for taking that initiative to be that person to create an environment for people, because one of these spiritually wounded people might walk through his doors, and I'll be so glad if they do, because he'll be there to understand how to teach them people, and that's just the best thing.
Oh, blessings on him, man. He's a shepherd. That's wonderful. Yeah.
There was an article I read recently about a church in America that's being specifically dedicated to helping people with spiritual abuse. Is this your church?
Oh, no. My church is a tiny little church in downtown Portland. I don't know.
I can't remember
we
if
have
it
a
was...
lot of survivors. We do have a lot of spiritual abuse survivors that come to our church because the spiritual abuse community, especially with like what you're doing and Casey and online and all of that, it's a growing and vibrant community and word gets out. Like this podcast, I'll put it in my network and it's in yours. And so the word kind of gets out that if you're interested in a church with this kind of pastor or this kind of philosophy, there is one. And so people do stop by and check it out. So that word of mouth, I think, really, really goes a long way in helping people. And most of the time, is they just, you're a survivor of spiritual abuse. You don't want to be recognized. You want to be anonymous. You want to be left alone when you, if you come to church. You don't want a guy like we went to a church after we left our abusive one. We went to a big church. They're called mega churches here. And it was a big one. And we parked, you know, way out of the back end of the parking lot with my car pointed out so that I could, you know, make a quick getaway. And as we got out, there was this nice old gentleman at the door who saw us. It seemed like it was a long ways away. And he said, "Hello, neighbor. Welcome to blah, blah, blah church." And I told Sharon right then, I didn't even have to say it under my breath. I said, "I want to go. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be yelled at. Hello, neighbor. I'm free. Blah, 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 blah." And of course, she said, "No, come on, go." So we went all the way up there and I had a name tag stuck on me. And everything I hate happened to me. Now, here's the deal. I'm a big boy. I survived it. It's not like I, you know, went home crying or anything. But spiritual abuse survivors want none of that. They don't want to give you their email. They don't want to jot down their name. They don't want to give you their birthday. They don't want a free coffee cup with espresso chocolate covered espresso. They don't want any of the little tricks about we really hope really bad we really hope you'll join us. They just want to see if they can breathe the air without burning out their soul and get out safely.
One last thing I just wanted to ask you about before we finish up today and tell the listeners where they can purchase your book is to ask if you could explain the section where you talk about ambiguity, because it was that exact section where I was like, all of those thoughts that I've had, you have in a tidy little yeah. paragraph in your book, and it really rang true to me as somebody that doesn't identify with a faith-based movement so much sense, and I feel like it can only make even more sense to people that are faith-based individuals.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you mentioned that particular section, and where it comes from is that within these cultic churches and abusive lockdown little churches, or they might be big, they have a very rigid set of beliefs about what it means to be a Christian. And in their set of beliefs, they might look at other groups and say, well, they're less Christian. The charismatics are defective, the Catholics are defective Christians, and these, the Church of England or whatever group, the Baptists are not real Christians or whatever. And it's based on belief systems. Recently in America, a wonderful Bible teacher and preacher named Beth Moore endured public humiliation and criticism from male leaders of the conservative church. And why? Because she's talking.
How dare she?
How dare she do that? So the belief system that leads to people being rigid about those things, when you're a part of that, and then the contract is broken and you leave, it can be very difficult for you to accept ambiguity in many areas of the Christian faith. It's really okay for you to believe something that other Christians don't believe. Not only do you not have to have a fight about it, you don't have to figure out if they're going to heaven or not. You don't even need to bring it up. Ambiguity means the willingness to be tolerant of the uncertainty of many parts of biblical truth, and where you just got to figure out between you and God and the Spirit what you believe, and don't go to war over it. When you walk out of a cult, it can be excruciating and painful to view the ambiguity that you feel out there with the belief systems of other Christians.
Was phenomenal for me to read that part, because it's something that I've been trying to explain on how you might recognize that in a church potentially might be abusive in some ways if they are not willing to have ambiguity themselves, if there is
trouble.
if there is a rigid and only one interpretation and everybody else is wrong. That to me, there are just so many different variations of every single major belief system in the world that can't possibly be true, unless, of course, and I talked about this with Siren Warner, who's an investigative journalist, we all get to the end of everything and it turns out that tiny little church in, I don't know, Nottingham of the UK, they were the only ones. They're a congregation of 36 people and they were the only ones that had it right. That can't be the way. So what you said there about ambiguity and being able to be maybe not perhaps flexible, but understand that might not just be one single way to interpret things, and that is exactly as they are, and that is fact, and there is no way around that. And that to me was just so eye-opening, so I appreciated you putting that into words.
Thank you. It's really about tolerance. You know, most of my friends, all of them that I went to seminary with, still dear friends of mine today, we believe different things about church and how to do it and all of that. But, you know, tolerance means I can say it doesn't matter that we disagree. It's not like you're going to preach in my church and try to overturn my beliefs on that day. You're going to respect me and I respect you because I love you as a friend. And tolerance means that we welcome people who aren't like us and grant them the freedom of the air they breathe without having to explain themselves to us.
In that same sense, that's why it's incredible to be able to have conversations with people that hold faith when I'm not somebody else, in the same sense that you don't just tolerate conversations, but you welcome them and you have conversations where you question things and you discuss things and you debate your differences and you think about things in a different way, and you're not just so stuck in one way of thinking. And I think that is progressive, like so progressive. We are looking at, hopefully, I mean, I say this now, but we're being progressive with human rights overall in terms of marginalized community groups, people that identify in a way that is not typical to stereotypes in society. And hopefully we can do that going forward with all things, including religion and non-religion and, you know, guns and anti-guns and Republicans and Democrats. I mean, I know it's not as easy and simple as just having two choices to make, but I am hopeful that there is progression in all things, including awareness of cultic abuse in religious and non-religious spaces.
Yes, yeah.
So please tell us where we can find copies of your book, Anded Faith?
At the moment, I've got a few copies here, but it would cost me $1 million to send them to you. So Wounded Faith is available. And its editor is Dr. Neil Domgaard. He's a wonderful man, a retired pastor in, I think he lives in Virginia now. I don't know if you're going to ever have anything to do with him, but he's just, he's really cool. And he put the whole book together. But so you would look under his name, that's D-A-M-G-A-A-R-D. And just the title, Wounded Faith, Understanding and Healing from Spiritual Abuse. I should apologize to all the authors, because when we were going around deciding on a title, I swear to God, this was just subconscious. I ended up with a title like my book. Isn't that terrible? And it, you know, as I look, my book is Understanding and Healing from Spiritual Abuse in Christian Churches. And this is Understanding and Healing from Spiritual Abuse. I'd say old Kenny G got a little Freudian there and made a little slip, but
I think it's perfect. I think it's great because both those books do both of those things, and your book in the House of Friends will just focus on elements of your personal journey, yes, as opposed to the subject of spiritual abuse overall.
If that
makes you feel better.
it does. Thank you. It does. And you know, this book, I reread it yesterday because I was doing this other podcast with more of the authors of it. And I realized again, what a wonderful, should hold it up, what a wonderful book it is. Because it's written with the idea that Christianity, or the practice of Christianity, is actually and can be a valid concept for a survivor of abuse in a Christian church. And in my experience, most other cults who spit out victims, those victims don't maintain a belief system of the cult. I have friends that left the Church of Scientology. They are not Scientologists who are just disaffected with Scientology. They are done, right? And that's true with some other groups too. But I find in Christianity, there needs to be real assistance for survivors, that somehow, you know, they're reaching out to touch the hem of his cloak. You know, I mean, they're just reaching out through the crowd because they somehow believe there's healing power there, that even what they've been through and what was done in his name, somehow he really is looking for them. And so I feel like this book was written with that in mind. So yeah. Did I do okay telling you where to find it? Amazon.com. Okay.
And in the House of Friends, is that available in the same place?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Fantastic. I will put links in the episode description to both of those books for anybody that would be interested in going and picking these, which I recommend that you do, whether you are a spiritual person or not, as I've explained in this episode. And that just leaves me to say a massive thank you for sending me a copy of the book and for contributing to Wounded Faith, for agreeing to come and be a guest on this show, for being so open and so honest about your experiences and how you were able to overcome those things, and talking about how difficult those things are, not saying it's easy, not saying you're out of your abusive environment and everything will change overnight for the better, and just for putting all of the experiences that you've had to the world so that people can learn from the abuse you've endured and positively change their lives from all of that. So thank you so much for the thing that you've done to educate everybody on spiritual abuse from your own experiences.
Thank you, Casey. And again, What a nice welcome you've given me. Thank you much. And to all of your people listening to you and that are connected with you, I just want to wish them blessing and healing and hope for the best for them.
Thank you so much, Ken. I'll speak to you soon. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
That is the end of this mini-series on surviving spiritual abuse. For a link to Ken's work, please follow the link in the episode description. To get in touch, you can find me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter and Instagram @cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, host of the Cult Vault Podcast.